Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today truly is an episode. took us a little bit to get everything organized. So, my name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and we're going to surprise you with a sponsor at the half hour. We're not going to tell you who it is right now.
You can just wait.
Yeah, you're going to be surprised.
Because we're making time here. Literally, we're making time. We have a little pop-in guest before our... Oh, sorry. My engineer needs something that's on the floor. Just a sec. We have the Deputy Consul General of Israel. There. How's that? I just talked to him on the phone, too. He's very nice. Matan Zamir is Israel's Deputy Consul General to the Pacific Northwest. He's been a member of Israel's Foreign Service since 2011, previously serving as the Deputy Chief of Mission at the Israeli consulates to Mumbai and to New England. He's all over the place.
Currently
he's at the office there in San Francisco where I had been before. And I'll tell you what, you couldn't get in there with a paperclip that wasn't authorized. It was really fun. I'm like, these guys are so good at security.
I gotta wonder what it's like now though.
It's like the safest place in the world. And he was also with the Israeli Defense Force. He has a decorated career with the Israeli Defense Forces and served in the IDF from 2000 to 2003, retired as a lieutenant, and trained over 1,000 cadets. That, of course, would have significance today because he's talking about the update of what's happening in Israel. And today is the 16th of May, 2021, in case we air this at a different time and you're wondering what the heck is happening. So on the 16th of May in 2021, this is the state of the affairs in Israel. So Matan, fire away. It's all yours.
Hi. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Bill, for hosting
me. Thanks for coming on.
I challenge you to bring your paper clips and see what happens. No, I'm kidding. Don't come. It's okay. It's safe. It's fine. Yeah.
I left my handgun at home. I just didn't want to cause a scene.
So as you mentioned, the date is, it's our seventh day of, what we call Operation Guardian of the Wall. Started last Monday on May 10th when we had rockets fired from Gaza to Jerusalem. And since then, the last time I checked was about an hour ago, over 3,000. The number was just updated to over 3,000 rockets fired in less than 7 days from Gaza to different parts of Israel.
And just to give people some perspective for that, because if you see Israel on the map, you might not, negotiate the size, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it is 1/11th the size of California.
I think even smaller than that. I think even 1/19, but it's the size of New Jersey.
Of New Jersey. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So when you have 3,000 rockets firing at something the size of New Jersey, that's really significant.
It is, and the initial target, so out of those 3,000, the first 7 missiles were targeted towards Jerusalem. Even though allegedly Hamas was firing these rockets, were trying to protect Jerusalem, but didn't mind firing 7 rockets at Jerusalem. But then the rest, mostly around the Gaza Strip, the Gaza envelope, which is the southern part of Israel, southwest, and then the other populated areas, Tel Aviv, the greater Tel Aviv area, and beyond.
I don't think people in the U.S. can't really appreciate that. People in other countries maybe a lot more. But there's always a lot of discussion about the fact that you guys always start it. That's what they always say. I know that that's actually not true, but when you get faced with that, what's the official response to that?
So you're right. And if we go back in history, we see riots and we see pogroms or violence against Jews from even before 1948, before Israel was founded. We see in Hebron in the 1920s, and we can go back and back. Israel never opened war. So it was always, there is a reason we call our army the Israeli Defense Force. because we do our best to defend our people. And every time, let's take this round, for example, we see months, years, weeks, and especially the days before, we see waves of incitement, not only by Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but also by senior folks from the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. One example is a video that I've seen a little over a week ago of a Hamas leader, a senior Hamas operative, calling the people, not just the Hamas operatives or the terrorists themselves, but every Palestinian to buy a $2 knife and just walk down the street and cut the necks or the heads of the Israelis and the Jews who live there.
Wow.
So that's one of many, many types of incitements that we see happening. That leads to Monday, where we saw the first rockets fired from Gaza. Israel took a long list of measures to de-escalate, actually, because we've seen the incitement around the holiday of Ramadan and around Ramadan and the area of Jerusalem. We've seen the incitement. So then we prevented Jews from going on the Temple Mount, and we derailed our March of Flags, the traditional Jerusalem Day parade. Monday, the day of the beginning of this operation, was a national day for us, Jerusalem Day, just in order to de-escalate. But in response to our attempt to de-escalate, we got those 3,000 rockets.
Wow. So how do you negotiate with folks that you know, in high places that talk that way? How do you sit down and negotiate with them?
On one hand, I'll say the idea is to negotiate with, when you negotiate with anyone to make peace, you negotiate with your enemies. But in this specific case, with these specific people, I agree with you. It's impossible to negotiate. People
No.
who are so fueled with nothing but hate. The idea is to make sure that when they act on it, that we're stronger and that we're able to retaliate and we're able to defend ourselves. And in this context, make sure that we destroy Hamas headquarters, we destroy Hamas infrastructure, and we kill those terrorists before they're able to kill us.
So are the rockets still being fired as of today?
Yes. Unfortunately, there's an app. I would not recommend people to, unless they have to download it. It's called the Red Color, where I think every single Israeli has one of those. And every time there's a siren, the app goes on. There's the different ways to communicate through TV channels and radio, but mostly Israelis will use that app. And not minutes ago, but I think an hour and a half ago, around the Gaza envelope, that app went up, meaning there's still ongoing missiles on an hourly basis. In the last six nights, more than a million Israeli kids were not sleeping at their bedrooms. They were sleeping at bomb shelters and staircases and safe rooms. And over 2 million Israelis not going to work, not having their everyday life, but being hijacked by the Hamas terrorists.
Yeah, that's... You know, it's really hard to imagine every kid in New Jersey that's sleeping in a bomb shelter tonight. You know, I mean,
people would be
on fire,
out.
Angry yeah. over that. That's not acceptable.
Well, and you were telling me that, again, the people who oppose you, I'm not sure, I've never really understood the logic of opposing Israel when you guys are the ones receiving the rockets. It makes no sense to me, but you said there were protests in San Francisco near your offices?
Yes, we've been seeing protests in different places, and not only in San Francisco, but around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also seen a lot of support rallies and events where people just go out to the street and express their solidarity with what you just said, with Israel's right to defend itself and to fight terror. Unfortunately, there are people who live here, and not only in the United States, but all over the world, who, I mean, for me, it's hard to explain their position, but I guess they support terror. They're motivated from supporting Hamas, who's a, world-recognized terror organization. I tried for me to even try to understand what these people are thinking when we see Hamas not only targeting innocent Israeli civilians, so not only targeting the most dense population center cities in Israel, but also shooting from within Palestinian population in Gaza, shooting from schools, from hospitals, from mosques, from press buildings. They have launchers. There's clear footage of how there's a residence, and right next to it, a launching pad, and how the rockets are being fired from the most dense, on purpose, in order to use the Gazan civilians, the innocent people who live in Gaza, as their human shield.
What do the people of the Palestinians, what do they think about that, having launchers right there in their neighborhoods, near schools and hospitals? I mean, are the Palestinian people backing this up?
So just one more thing that I wanted to add is that not only a lot of people don't know that 30% of the rockets that Hamas and the other terror organizations fire from Gaza actually fall within the Gaza Strip, causing death and destruction not only on the Israeli side to the Israeli innocent and population and women and children, but also to the Palestinians themselves, killing families, destroying homes.
Wow.
Not all the missiles are very long range, so they fall within the Gaza Strip, and that's the result. I think a lot of the Palestinians have been suffering from incitement for years. Hamas, they have their own youth camps, summer camps, school, where they teach hate towards not only Israel, but towards the United States, towards Jews in general, towards the Western world from a very early age. But I'm optimistic in nature, and I believe that the majority of the Palestinians who live in Gaza, they want peace. They want stability. They want to de-escalate the situation, but they're hijacked by a terror organization that their own interest, Hamas' only interest is to preserve and increase their power.
Right.
Well, I would imagine that your ability to speak out against the guys that are firing the rockets is pretty much zero over there. It's like, okay, we'll just kill you now, you can shut up.
A good example to that is what we see in Iran, and Iran is backing Hamas, not by ideology and by funding and money and resources, and it's not very different. People who live in Iran, we've seen these protests, we've seen it in universities in Iran and with the general public, but the Revolutionary Guard and the Iranian regime is so powerful that, like you said, they silence any type of resistance against them.
Sure.
What does Israel know what the numbers on the ground are as far as the Palestinian fighters? Are there thousands? Are there just a handful? Any idea?
So we're talking about, there are 2 million people living, a little over 2 million people living in Gaza. We're talking about thousands. Again, only 20%, again, it's something that not all people know, only 20% of the rockets fired from Gaza are actually being fired by Hamas. What Hamas is doing is not only shooting at Israel themselves using their own operatives, but they also allow Palestinian Islamic Jihad and a long list of other terrorist groups, much smaller groups than Hamas, but who still live in the Gaza Strip. So if I total everything, we're talking about thousands, perhaps more. Mm. And from different branches of the organization.
Right, right. So this isn't just a handful of fighters causing trouble. This is a fairly substantial army that is amassing over there.
Yes, and again, people look at it sometimes as perhaps it's just the people rising and protesting. We're talking about a war machine. We're talking about terror mechanism, money, funding coming from Iran, coming from other organizations, and also international aid money coming from European countries, coming from Qatar, that Hamas, the government in Gaza, people who are supposed to, the same people who are supposed to take care of infrastructure and welfare, they're using the money that they're getting to build schools and to feed and to buy COVID vaccines to feed the population, to build terror tunnels and terror infrastructure. So it's a machine with a money funding arm, and an ideological arm, and also terror arm.
Kind of curious, how much is coming from the United States?
I'm not sure that the United States... So I'm pretty sure that the United States is not funding Hamas directly. The United States is funding the Palestinian Authority.
Right.
A lot of that money actually gets to the Palestinians. Unfortunately, also in the Palestinian Authority, we see money allocated to pay salaries to the families of terrorists. That is not in Gaza. It's in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the American money gets there, but we're not talking about... I don't think there's any American money getting to support Hamas in Gaza.
Hamas, okay.
Well, I was kind of curious about the, you know, your take on the response by some of the elected officials here in the U.S. I think we're looking at it. You know, you've got Ocasio-Cortez and some of these other people. It's like, oh my God, so embarrassing. But there's been quite a bit. So maybe give us a little bit on that.
So I'll say that we're receiving an overwhelming international support. I think more and more countries today in the world understand that Israel is doing the right thing, and it could happen in any other country. If you fight a terror organization, I think the international community will be on your side. Same with we've been getting here, even at the consulate to San Francisco where I work, both Democrats and Republicans, a lot of legislators on the federal level and on the state level writing to us and tweeting publicly and expressing support. I will not get into the internal political discussion between some elements in the American system commenting here or there, but I have to say that the over 90% of the feedbacks and the responses that we've been getting from American leaders are extremely positive.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't expect you to name names. That's not actually, I'm sure that's not going to go over well. The American public reaction, for the most part, has been pretty good, or can you...
The American public?
Yeah, can you tell?
Yes. I think we see a situation where we see a lot of support, like I've mentioned, from people, you know, both citizens but also leaders. We've seen some elements of criticism. You talked about the demonstration. And I think we have a vast majority that is quiet, that either doesn't know enough or just choose not to comment or not. Yeah. And my advice or my opinion on that is to go online, read. There's a lot of misinformation going on, but there's also a lot of videos where you can see for yourself what's been happening on the ground and make an informed decision. I can say that we've been fighting this disinformation. There's a lot of social media materials where we know for sure is, for example, there's a post of a little girl and the Israelis, we are being accused for hurting her. She's in she's in terrible condition. You can see it in the picture. And then you realize that it's a 2014 picture from Syria where 700,000 Syrians were killed by their own administration.
Huh.
That's one example. But there are many of those. So it's a critical thinking, obviously, in general, when you look at social media these days.
Sure.
And choosing what channel to trust.
That's a good question. That's not on my list from Charles. Probably not something I'm supposed to say. He gave me a few ideas, but our time was short with you. But what would, if you were going to point people to good resources for information, what would be your, top recommendations where they would get factual information?
So I think, and, you know, I work for the Israeli Foreign Ministry, but I know for sure that every single piece of information that we send out, there are 10 sets of eyes who are going over it, confirm it, double-checking it. So the information that we send on the consulate platform is 100% verified by a lot of people on different arms of the Israeli government, different branches of the Israeli government. And same with what the IDF is sending. For example, there was an incident yesterday in Gaza where the building where Al Jazeera and AP journalists were sitting.
Yeah, we saw that.
And there was a lot of disinformation about the fact that perhaps this building was just a media building and there were no Hamas operatives sitting in this building or having their office in the building. And there is evidence, there is proof that Hamas used this building. And again, as part of their human shield strategy to use people, population, but also journalists as their human shield, having an intelligence office in that building, what we did, and there's videos of it. The reason I mention it is because there's videos of it on our channel and the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force channel, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs channel, on how this building was informed in advance that there's going to be a strike, how that is the reason that nobody, you know, was either injured or hurt or killed in this the strike, because it was, you know, we're talking about a building that's 10, 15 floors, collapsed, and nobody was injured. That's not just luck. It's because it was previously warned. People were evacuating it. And there's a lot of disinformation, and the channels, the very few channels that are actually presenting the facts on how people were warned, how people were asked to evacuate the building, how the building was ended up attacked, and what was in it, is on our platform.
Okay, and how do people find that? What would be a good way for them to go?
So for us, for example, it's just on Twitter, Israel in SF, Israeli MFA, Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and IDF, Israeli Defense Force. All of those are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc.
Cool. I'm going to post those on our website. So for people who are driving in a car, swerving, trying to write that down, don't be swerving. There's enough of that. There's enough of that going on out there. I'll post those on the site for people, because I get your updates and I find them very, very helpful. I know we only have a couple minutes left, but I also wanted to ask you, you know, I mean, you could be speaking to anybody at this point in time, because our show goes wherever people send it. What would you like to tell people that they're not getting or they're maybe not hearing?
So thank you for, first of all, let me thank you for sharing this information.
Absolutely.
I would also encourage people who, I mean, it can be criticism. We value criticism, unlike Hamas, when you can't really criticize a terror organization. But
yeah,
also signs of support and messages of support, we'll accept everything, and we also communicate on our platform. So if you just go through the consulate channels, we'll be happy to have a conversation and not just you're not just sending messages, but we're also engaging. And what's important to know is that we are in the, this is, it's not just about Hamas and it's not just about Israel. We see, fundamentalistic, extreme Islamic terror in Syria. We see it in Lebanon with Hezbollah. We see it in Iran. We see it in Nigeria with Boko Haram, in Yemen, all over the world. There, agenda is to destabilize. The ideology is very similar between the different organizations. It does not reflect on all Arabs and Muslims around the world. On the contrary, I think we're talking about terror organizations hijacking civil population to serve their own purposes. It's a bigger picture. Israel is currently the one fighting it at the moment, but it can raise its head. We've seen a lot of incidents in Europe and even here in the United States where terrorists have been, you know, trying to violently implement their ideology.
Sure.
So it's a bigger picture. So, yes.
And recruit, obviously.
Recruit and then cause death and destruction.
Yep, it's all about the disinformation. Well, I was looking at the bottom of your bio. We should tell people, too, that you grew up in Jerusalem, and your family's lived there for 9 generations. So
right, and that's, so this, Jerusalem is in my heart. Even though I live in San Francisco now, Jerusalem is part of the Yesed Amnat generation. And to go back to what we started with, the fact that the Hamas used Jerusalem as an excuse to protect the Temple Mount from the Israelis who've been allowing, you know, anybody to pray on the Temple Mount since 1967, but then a day later, sending rockets at Jerusalem that could easily target that same Temple Mount, that's, I think, a good example of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And for me, any rocket fired at Israel, but particularly in Jerusalem, which is my hometown, breaks my heart.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Well, we really appreciate you popping on with us today, Matan. I'm sure you have things things to do. The weather's nice. You're not currently being shelled, although Shalomi's in Israel, right? Your boss?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Shlomi. Yeah. Shlomi's in Israel with his family, running back and forth from the bomb shelter.
Ugh.
And
ugh,
working remotely, yeah.
Who would have thought he'd be happy to get back to San Francisco, but...
Yeah.
He's like, I just got to dodge the homeless people. That's nothing. God.
Right. Yeah.
Don, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much, and thanks for reaching out. We'd be happy to have you on any time. We'd be honored to do more updates on what's happening in Israel.
Thank you both.
All our best to you and the folks there, and we hope that Hamas finds something better to do. Or
sounds good.
Maybe accidentally goes away.
Yeah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
Goodbye.
You are listening to We the People. We'll kind of start again here at the bottom of the hour. You can find everything about the show at wethepeopleradio.us.
Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Grass or short, don't get your money's worth. With this show, it had my power.
There we go. All right, so... We started off a little kooky, and we preempted our little sponsor announcement, so hit it, Bill.
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape Machinery is located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard up in Shasta Lake City. Go by and see them for all your John Deere products. They got great inventory and lots of folks there that can help you. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
There we go.
Ta-da. So we're going to swerve into our next topic that's kind of not related, although interesting segue. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and he has been with us before on a variety of topics. You'll notice in his bio, he has done a lot of research and has tons of expertise on Islam and the Quran. Slight tie to the earlier thing, and I posted all the previous shows, actually. I think you'll find them very interesting. He also has firearms credentials and experience up the wazoo. He's a pilot. He's just done all sorts of stuff. He's just a man of many talents. We love having him on. We did a whole big home defense, two shows on home defense in December with him. Those are posted on there. Lots of people found that helpful. So... always timely. You can go back and listen to those. That is not dated information. Today, we are going to swerve into the China virus and vaccines.
I understand China has a really good vaccine right now. You can get it at a discount. I think they're going to serve it up at Walmart. But it's free, but it's maybe...
might make you glow in the dark, but...
yeah, you might have to get three or four of them.
Other than that, don't worry about it.
Yeah, three or four of them to make it
work. So this is
going to
be kind of a fact or fiction thing, and Peter's a really, really good researcher, and he has sent us, and we have listed, I can't even now tell you, probably one, like 10 different documents on here. So he's not actually talking off the top of his head. There's also a PowerPoint linked that you can follow if you would like to. And when Robert gets the video done, the PowerPoint will be on there. So you know, full experience program here. Hey, Peter. Thanks for giving
How
Israel...
you doing?
Thanks for deferring to Israel so they could do an update on the rocket fire at the...
Well, you know, it's funny. It occurred to me while listening to him that what would our reaction be if Mexico started sending rockets into California... and Arizona and Texas
and they were, you know, bombing San Diego.
Oh, that's that's an easy one. We would just get John Kerry and James Taylor together, and they'd go down and straighten that whole thing out. That'd be no problem.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm reminded of Pancho Villa back in, what, 1916 and Blackjack Pershing?
Yep.
And how we sent Blackjack Pershing down there with the military and to wipe these guys out. I don't understand why people are constantly, you know, haranguing Israel for trying to defend itself. What would you do if you had 3,000 rockets that landed right in your big...
Yeah, anything you could to make it stop.
I don't know how many people have been to New Jersey, but New Jersey's not very big. And when you start looking at the size of Israel and you look at the volume of rocket fire, that's terrifying. I mean, the idea of shooting rockets at the United States, well, heck, you could be reasonably assured you're not going to be hit. But when you're in that small a space, you're sitting duck, and they're right next door. I don't understand the support either. So thanks for letting those guys come on. And you have a family connection with Israel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Quite extensive. Going back to... earlier in 1948, when Israel became a state, David Ben-Gurion's wife was my grandfather's surgical nurse in his medical practice in New York.
Oh, wow.
And Ben-Gurion came to New York in the late 20s to see my grandfather, and he ran into this beautiful Polish woman named Paula in the office, and he came back several more times, and I think just to court her, and then he married her and took her back to Israel with him.
So, nice. And
very long, right?
Yeah, and you had you had family murdered in the Holocaust by the Nazis. I mean, it was just interesting.
Oh,
you
yeah.
happened to be the guy that was going to be on following them. I thought, wow, kind of timely. So not to steal from you here in your awesome research, because this is a huge topic, this COVID vaccine thing, and we're down to the part now where they're giving away hamburgers to get people to get the shot. So,
well, good.
Yeah,
let's
do some factor fiction there.
This.
Yeah.
Okay, I put the PowerPoint, which is on your website, and I would love to have people just click on that and they could follow along. But I have more information here in the last 3 weeks. Since I developed the PowerPoint and started lecturing to people about it wherever I can. Let me tell you a little something about the vaccines up here for people who are just tuning in. The vaccines are produced with a protocol called mRNA. It's messenger ribonucleic acid. We can get into the woods on that in a little while. But it's never, ever, in the history of mankind, ever been used to produce a vaccine, which is why the FDA still has to issue emergency use authorization for it, because there have been no clinical safety trials. Now, when we talk about the trials that have been done, and this is very important, I have recently discovered about a week ago that when Pfizer, for example, supposedly did clinical trials, what they did was they excluded certain groups of people in the trials to decide whether or not it worked and it was safe. The people that they excluded were pregnant women, people who had heart attacks, and people with diabetes, okay, and people who had COVID and recovered. Now, the reason that they excluded these people is because they did not want to see any adverse reactions in these trials. One of the main problems that exists now today are people who have had COVID and recovered, because then when they do the blood antibody test, they discover antibodies. Now, I have personal friends of mine who, in fact, contracted COVID. It was not severe. They recovered, and then they turned around and they got the damn vaccine. Now they are sick as dogs.
Yep.
two of them after the second one have died 3 days after they got the second shot.
Yep.
Because what happens is when you have the antibodies built up, now you inject the vaccine and they fight with each other. Mm-hmm. Because the antibodies now feel as though the vaccine is attacking them. Now, let me explain to you how that works. Imagine in the old cowboy days, in the sheriff's office, there were wanted posters for bad guys. So what happens now with the vaccines is that the antibodies take a look for the wanted posters of the bad guys. The problem is that they will tell you at Pfizer and the rest of the pharmaceutical companies, well, there's no dead virus in this vaccine. That's true. But what is in the vaccine is the wanted poster. So I have this directly from several molecular biologists that I have talked to in the last 3 weeks. And what they're saying is that what the pharmaceutical companies have done is they have put a recipe or a blueprint, or if you would like, a wanted poster, okay, for the virus into the vaccine. So that now if you have had COVID and you've built up antibodies and you take the vaccine, all of a sudden the antibodies recognize the wanted poster and they start to fight it.
Right.
Okay? So there are a whole bunch of lies out there about this stuff. There are obfuscations about this stuff. I have a suspicion that this really involves a lot of money. And just this morning, which is really interesting, I was watching Maria Bartiromo on Fox. And she was talking about the vaccine at Anthony Fauci. And she was mentioning, and she played the clips of Senator Rand Paul basically interrogating Fauci in front of the Senate the other day. And Fauci was absolutely adamant that the United States government and the NIH and the NIAID, the Infectious Diseases Agency, never financed any gain-of-function experimentation at the Wuhan lab. And the man lied through his teeth, because I found earlier this week, I found the exact proof. It's documented. It's now on your website. It's all the way at the bottom, and it's about the bat virus. And this is a report that came out, you ready, in 2015. And if you will scroll down, there's 8 pages. You won't understand most of it, but if you scroll down to where Shengli Shi, who was the bat woman that they call in China, who knows more about these viruses than anybody in the world, she acknowledges the funding for the research by the NIH.
Hmm.
Now, I don't understand why investigative reporters, and I don't care what agency you work for, are refusing to accept this information other than the fact that it was under Obama.
Oh.
Now, I also have this famous PAWS document. There is the document, you put it on your website, concerning how under Obama there was this order that stated that we could not, in fact, and this is going way back to 2014, I think, that states that the United States cannot engage in any gain of function, and that means to enhance the virus so it's worse. Any gain of function research in the United States. Now, when you go down to paragraph.
Hold that thought, though. We got all screwed up this hour. We're normally going to only have 2 breaks, but we had to kind of cram them both in on your part. Sorry. Quick break. We'll be right back, but I hope that people go to the website and look at the documents we have posted, and anything else we talk about, I'll continue to add it as we go. You can find that all at
wethepeopleradio.us.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys. You gotta draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
Doctor isn't Fauci anyway. He's not curing anything. So, Peter, go back to the gain of function and tell me which document that is, please, and I will put them in order.
Okay, well, if you,
oh, it's the first one, actually, right?
Pardon?
It's the first one I listed was the gain of function one.
Yes.
Okay.
And if what gain of function is you have a virus, and the virus is not that contagious and whatever, and then in the laboratory you modify that virus to make it a lot more deadly and a lot more contagious. That's called gain of function. Now, when you go down to the bottom on the website, you will discover the bat virus paper that was put out in 2015 by the people in Wuhan talking about gain of function and freely admitting down there and thanking Dr. Fauci and the NIH for their funding. So when Fauci says that we have never funded, you know, gain of function to China, I mean, that's just a bald-faced lie. There it is in black and white.
And we kind of interrupted you when you were explaining gain of function. Go back to that, because it's a term that's thrown around a lot, and for those of us that are not scientists, you know.
Okay.
Do that part again.
Okay, gain of function again means that you take something that is relatively benign and you weaponize it. Okay? You make it a lot worse to deal with than it originally started out as. Now, that is a man-made situation. While the original virus, coronaviruses, are found in nature, you can also weaponize those viruses through the gain-of-function methodology, where you make them a lot more contagious and with a much higher fatality rate. And that's what China has done. Now, one other thing I want to get in there real quick about the vaccines. If you have had COVID, you have built up antibodies in your system. The antibodies in the system provide long-term immunity to the virus. However, if you have never had COVID and you take the vaccination, about 30 to 60 days after you get the vaccination, if you are tested for antibodies, you have no antibodies, and there is absolutely no way at that point to prove that you ever had the vaccination other than you have a vaccine card.
Mm.
So now when they come out and they start talking about masks, and if you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear the mask anymore, well, that's baloney. That's absolutely hogwash. Because the problem here is that the vaccines dissipate the way they're designed within about 3 months. And there is no way whatsoever to test a person who has had the vaccine 3 months later to see whether they actually had the vaccine.
Because there's no antibodies, right?
There's no antibodies.
Right.
That's correct. In other words, what happens with this vaccine theoretically is that they will develop what's called a spike protein around the cell. And they will swear up and down that the RNA material, this messenger RNA material, on a temporary basis, is going to create this spike protein around the cell, but it will not enter the cell and upset or modify your DNA. They do not know that. They do not know that. There is no long-term information whatsoever, even though they had been playing with messenger RNA methodology for something like 15 years or so in a laboratory, but it has never been used on a human being.
But isn't some RNA therapies being used with cancer right now?
Well, they're trying to.
Look at you, Dr. Bill.
But what they've done, that's why they turned around in 9 months and they modified the research that they've been doing to see whether or not this would work. Well, how do you tell if it works? You have to expose people to the virus. Right? I mean, that only makes sense.
Right.
Say, well, show me the data where people who have been vaccinated were exposed to the virus to assure that it works. There is no data.
Mm-mm.
There is absolutely no data. Well, so the only two.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It sounds like if you were exposed to the virus, you don't want to take the vaccine anyway, right?
That's a medical decision. That's something personal, and I can't give medical advice. I can only tell you what the research shows.
Okay.
So there's only two coronaviruses that ever made headlines. One was the SARS, sudden acute respiratory syndrome. In 2003, it killed 774 people around the world only. I'm glad I'm not one of them. Okay, but the problem is that the pharmaceutical companies thought it was going to be a pandemic. They spent $40 billion trying to develop vaccines, and then the whole thing fizzled out. They lost billions. Hold that thought. And then in 2012, we got the MERS virus, which is the Middle East respiratory syndrome, and that stayed confined to the Middle East and didn't wind up coming over here. Okay, so when COVID-19, and what COVID-19 stands for, COVID stands for coronavirus disease of 2019.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And people were worried when it first broke out that it might not be a normal coronavirus. Okay, what's interesting is that immediately back in September, October of 2019, the Chinese army surrounded Wuhan. Wouldn't let anybody in and wouldn't let anybody out. China at the time reported that they had contained the virus, that there were 83,000 people infected, and they only had 5,000 deaths. Well, we know today that that is a bunch of bull. Okay? When you take a population of 1.4 billion people, and then you take 5,000 and divide it by 1.4 billion, you have a fatality rate that is 0.0005. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about the numbers because the media and our government has been phonying the numbers ever since this thing started. What they did was they take the total number of cases on record and the total number of deaths, and they divide the total number of deaths by the cases, which gives you an absolutely false number. I've been a statistician for years. I used to teach statistics. You don't do that. That's a false number. You take the number of deaths and you divide it by the total population, not just the cases that have tested positive.
Right.
That gives you the real number. Okay, we'll go into that. Okay? So severe illness in this virus occurs in about less than 10% of cases. And they have a 98.9% recovery rate if you do the numbers correctly. And we don't do that because the media, you know, wants to put fear into people. Okay, so
about the fear. Hold that thought, Peter. This little segment here was obviously very short, but we've got a whole nother hour, and we will explore the rest of this. I really hope people We'll go online and pull these documents while you're talking and take a look at them. You can find them at wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're also a full-line Honda dealer. Well, I say full-line generators and turf equipment, and then also they handle the full product line of steel products. So go by and see them. Generator season is right around the corner. You're going to need a generator when PG&E decides to turn power off. But go up and see them. They have lots on hand. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Okay, so today is May the 16th, 2021. The first part of the program at the very top of the hour was an update from the Israeli consulate. So if you missed that, wait till our friend Robert Exter here cuts out the commercials and pick it up later on this afternoon. It was a good update. And this hour we are continuing on with our guest Peter Friedman with his extensive research, actually, about the fact and fiction involved in the coronavirus, so we don't burn any more daylight for you, Mr. Friedman. Bill wants us to get back to statistics.
Yeah, you
where
were talking
we
about
off.
The numbers and the actual yes. real numbers.
Let me give you a couple of numbers.
Okay.
As of 3 weeks ago, the CDC reported American deaths from COVID-19, which is another issue altogether. It's because there's a difference between dying with COVID and dying from COVID.
Yeah, big difference.
And the CDC on their website says only 6% have died from COVID. Okay? But the CDC reported 500,400 deaths. This was 3 weeks ago. And if you divide that number by the total population of America, 320 million, you have a result that is 0.00001. That means one death for every 100,000. But that's not what the government did. What they did was they took the 500,400 and they divided that by the positive testing cases, which came out to be 7 out of 10,000, when the actual number is one death for every 100,000. So the government reported, this is 3 weeks ago, 79,611,982 total COVID tests performed, with 6,873,739 testing positive. Now, if you take that 6,873,000 and you divide it by the 79,611, now they come out and they say, oh my God, we have a 9% positive test rate.
Yeah, no.
That's crap.
Yeah. Plus, they aren't taking into consideration the people that have been tested more than once.
Oh, of course not. Okay? So you have to go and take a look as to how many are actually infected, and you have to answer three questions. Number one, how reliable is the test? Who was tested? And how many deaths did COVID really cause? And what you come up with based on the statistically correct numbers, not Common Core nonsense, this is a laboratory-created pandemic. The main test that is used is called the polymerase chain reaction, or PCR test. The problem is the test was created in Germany a year ago. Okay? Quality controls for the testing were ignored completely for COVID-19. Nobody has any idea or any data whatsoever about the efficacy of the PCR test because the test results vary depending upon when you test someone after they become infected. So the PCR test has got a 20% false rate. Okay, so who needs to get tested? In order to be accurate, you need to discriminate within a population. So if you have an asymptomatic population, you only have to do minimal tests. You know they're asymptomatic. You know they're going to come up negative. Leave them alone. So if you have a very vulnerable population, okay, then you have people with comorbidities. For example, they have heart disease, they have obesity, they have diabetes, okay? Then these are the people that should be tested, and those people need to be put someplace where you can tend to them. Now, one of the interesting things that you put on the website down there with the research information is the report by Dr. Peter McCullough and his group. These are guys who are MDs who actually are treating and have treated COVID patients, okay, with excellent results. McCullough came out with this report in last August, and in the report, he argues that the CDC has never come out with any outpatient protocol treatment. Now, we know that when Trump tested positive, he immediately went over to Bethesda Naval Hospital. They treated him with hydroxychloroquine, with Regeneron, with ivermectin, and the guy immediately recovered and came out. However, if you go to your doctor and you test positive, your doctor is prohibited from prescribing any outpatient therapeutic protocol for you. You've got to read Dr. McCullough's report. Now, he put out the report in August. Some Republican senators had him come up to the Hill, and he testified in November. He went home. His daughter said, "Dad, why don't you create a YouTube about the testimony?" He created the YouTube. Actually, his daughter created the YouTube for him. Put it up on YouTube, and within 5 days, YouTube took it down and said he violated their terms of service. What is fascinating is if you have Fox Nation, if you are a subscriber to Fox Nation, Tucker Carlson just did a 45-minute interview on Fox Nation with Dr. McCullough, and you've got to watch this. It is worth paying whatever it is now for Fox Nation just to watch the interview with Dr. McCullough. And Dr. McCullough is sitting there with Tucker going, "You know something, Tucker? There's something funny going on here. Why are there no individual outpatient treatment protocols?" Nothing. The answer from the medical community and the government is you've got to take the vaccine. Take the vaccine, period. I've had these discussions with my doctor, with several other doctors, and they all say the same thing. We are prohibited. We are prohibited, and we will lose our medical license if we treat a COVID-19 positive patient with any therapeutics that are not approved. And I asked each one of them, "Well, what's approved?" None of them.
Wow.
Now, you've got to ask yourself why. You've got to ask yourself why. Okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, and this interview with Carlson will blow you away when you hear this and you read his report that he co-wrote with a number of other MDs talking about the fact that here is what they've done here is how they have treated outpatient people when they first test positive. And if you catch it early and you treat it with the right therapeutics, they don't wind up in the hospital. So, you know, it occurred to me, if you take all of the people, the 500 and some odd thousand Americans who died, most of them were over 65, you know what that saved the country in Medicaid and Medicare payments?
No.
Over $30 billion.
Wow.
$30 billion. Now, if you expand that to the 3.5 million elderly who died worldwide, gee, that comes out to about $400 billion in savings to the governments in paying for Medicare and Medicaid patients, the National Health Service in the UK, Italy. All you got to do is think about it.
Wow.
There's a lot of money involved here. There's a hell of a lot of money. So why would they want to allow people to catch this, not cure them early, and let them try and go through it at home until they get to the point where they can't breathe? They send them to the hospital, and what the people in the hospital immediately do is they put them on intubation. They put them on intubation so that they in the hospital can't catch this, because an intubated person, of course, can't spread it.
Oh.
Now, I'm not telling you what's going on. I'm telling you what the research shows. This is what is going on. Draw your own conclusions. Okay? So,
that's
for example, the case fatality rates for seasonal flu are 0.1, in other words, 0.1% to 0.2%. Okay? There are approximately 500,000 flu deaths in the world population of 7 billion. So if you take on an annual basis the 500,000 flu deaths from the seasonal flu and you divide it by 7 billion, your death rate now comes out to 0.00007, or worldwide from the seasonal flu annually, 7 people per 100,000. Well, wait a minute. There's very little difference between the death rate from the seasonal flu and from COVID-19.
How about that?
How about that?
That's not a pandemic.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Okay? So we talk about this thing being produced in the laboratory. There's a very good book that came out. You can buy it on Amazon for about $7. It's on my last list on my slide on the PowerPoint. It was originally published in Germany in April of last year. And these two molecular biologists and MDs, Dr. Karina Rice and Dr. Sucharit Bhakti, you've seen Sucharit Bhakti, I believe, on Ingram's show, Laura Ingram, periodically. And they published a book in Germany in April of last year called Corona False Alarm, with a question mark. Facts and figures. The book was in German. It was translated into English in June of last year, and they couldn't find an American publisher to publish it. They finally got it published in England, and it's on Amazon. I strongly suggest that you buy the book. It's $7. It's one of the best things that you can invest in. And you read this. And here are the facts and figures as they found in Germany when it's all started in Germany. Now, if you want to connect dots, let's connect some dots. Dot number one, it was an election year.
How convenient.
Dot number one. Oh, dot number two, well, because of COVID, we're going to scare the hell out of the population and everybody can vote by mail. Don't we all know how that wound up, okay? I'm trying to go through this quickly unless we can do this again in another week or two.
Let's take a really quick break, and then we can roll to the top of the hour. And I just want to add to dot number one, it was an election year, and one of the guys that was running was somebody they really, really hated.
Yeah, so, might have had something to do
I mean,
with
election
it.
Year is always poignant.
And
but,
it worked out so well, we're going to probably do it again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're definitely talking to you some more about this. Sorry we had to give this a bum's rush, but we will come back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can always find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Are you with me, Dr. Wu? Are you really just a shadow of the man that I once knew? Are you crazy? Are you high? Or just an ordinary guy? Have you done all you can do? Are you with me, Doctor?
Went to my family doctor for a pain inside my head. I told him that since you left me, I was feeling like just about dead. Well, doctor, what can you give me? And could it take one or two? Can you tell me just what it's gonna do? Will it save me from what I'm going through? Will it ease the pain?
That's the $64,000 question. Back to the dots.
Okay. Well, you just start thinking about these dots. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't believe in coincidences. I do believe in perfect storms when all of the causal events, you know, do a chain reaction. I mean, I've done a lot of aircraft accidents and stuff, and you know, I can tell. Well, no, that wasn't an act of God. Okay, here's what happened, and this led to this, and then this led to this, and this, on and on and on. So there's all kinds of dots in here, and if you go to my PowerPoint, you'll see a lot of these dots. I bring the dots up, and you connect the dots, okay? If the connection is okay with you, that's fine, and if it's not, I respect that too. But let's talk about masks, because there is so much garbage out there about these masks. Absolutely unbelievable. The mask now is for the Democrats was the what the MAGA hat was, you know, for Trump voters.
Yeah, kind of. That's true.
Yeah, so if you wear a mask today, you look at people walking out on the street in the fresh air. If they're wearing a mask, they're obviously Democrats.
I like them in their car by themselves wearing their mask. That's my favorite.
Okay. Masks except for the N95 mask made in America, not the KN95 mask made in China, the U.S.-made N95 mask, if it's worn correctly, is the only mask that will prevent you from contracting this virus from somebody who has it. Now, let me explain how the mask works. Your cloth mask have a 97% penetration rate. They're absolutely worthless. You ought to leave them in the bathroom in case you run out of toilet paper. Okay. The virus, to get through, has to have a host. The thickness of the virus, okay, the actual virus molecule is 0.01 of a nanomicron. It's 0.01 nm, nanomicron. Do you know how thick a micron is? A micron is 1/1000th of a millimeter. A nanomicron, 1 nanomicron, is 1/1000th of 1/1000th of a millimeter. So a 0.01 thickness of the actual virus molecule, okay, is 1/100 of 1/1000th of a micron. It's going to pass through anything. It's like a mosquito. You're putting up a chain link fence in your backyard, and hoping that it's going to stop mosquitoes from coming into the backyard.
That doesn't work?
No, it doesn't work. Of course not. The mosquitoes fly in and out of the chain link fence.
Oh, explains a lot.
Right? I told you.
The virus, to be infective, has to have a host. It has to attach itself. So imagine a mosquito who lands on a leaf, and the leaf then blows towards the chain link fence. The chances are the chain link fence will stop the leaf. Okay? The mosquito doesn't get through. So this is what we're talking about. It takes an electron microscope in order to see the virus molecule. That's how small it is. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when you take these cloth masks and everything, they're completely worthless. They're totally worthless. Okay? I have a whole thing in the PowerPoint on masks and mask protection, and it's stupid. One of the things I have in there, have you ever heard of Flonase?
Yeah.
You know, for allergies.
Right.
I have that in there too, Flonase. It has a corticosteroid in it called fluticasone. FLUCTICISONE. Okay, the brand name is Flonase. Well, how does it work? Inside your sinuses, it looks like honeycomb. Imagine a beehive, and you have all these little cells in there. Well, what the fluticasone does, when you spray it in your nose, it fills those cells up so that the allergens can't get in to your system. Nobody in the last year and a half has even recommended to shoot fluticasone every morning and every evening. Why don't you fill those cells out? Because that's where you catch the virus the most, is through your nasal passage. That's why they do the PCR test with a swab inside your nose.
I thought that was actually testing your brain. It looks like they ram it up there pretty far.
Well, they don't have to. Okay? I mean, sometimes they do that, you know, depending upon, you know, what kind of a test you're actually having. But if you take and you shoot and spray in your nose every morning some Flonase, the chances are you're going to be somewhat protected more than you even are with a mask. Makes sense. It's all over the counter, for God's sake.
Hmm.
Okay. So I told you about how they classified COVID-19 deaths. I have several death certificates on the PowerPoint showing that there was a guy on a motorcycle. The guy got killed on the freeway on the motorcycle, and when they took him into the morgue and they were doing a autopsy on the guy for the hell of it, they did a COVID test. They found he was COVID positive. So the cause of death they talk about is now he died from COVID-19. No, he didn't. He got killed on a motorcycle, and he just happened to test positive in the morgue. So this is kind of what
I like
going
the gunshots, people who had gunshots, and, you know,
because
that kept coming out. Gunshot wound, died of COVID. It's like, they could not.
You know, and then we got the whole nonsense with Cuomo in New York. He needs 40,000 ventilators, and the hospitals are all going to be overrun. And so what did Trump did? He sent the hospital ship there, which never got used. They sent up a whole MASH unit in Javits Center, which never got used, and he didn't need 40,000 ventilators, okay? What they wanted the ventilators for was to intubate patients so that they would, so the hospital workers, of course, would not catch COVID, okay? So we've had kind of a whole thing here. What's really interesting is when you go to the your website, and you download the PowerPoint, and you go through the PowerPoint, and then you read this research that's on there on this website with Dr. McCullough and everything. Man, it opens your eyes. Okay?
Yeah,
one of the
you
other
start to
problems,
see the
which I
big picture. Hey, and you know, just so you don't feel like you're being chased by a pack of dogs here the last half hour trying to fit everything in, we have you scheduled for the 30th, and we were going to talk about climate change.
Right.
If we
want to
if we want to plan on the fly, we could do the second half of this and then move climate change another week. Mull that over on your secondary brain track while we're chatting here.
Okay.
See if that flies for you.
Now, there's one of the problems that arose, which I have personal experience with, when this whole thing broke out, is the fact that the hospitals thought they were going to be inundated with COVID patients, and they stopped doing surgeries. They stopped doing testing and cancer testing, everything else.
Yes.
Well, let me tell you my experience. Starting in the end of March, I had an enlarged prostate, and I needed what's called a TURP procedure, a transurethral resection procedure, where they go up your willy with a first oversized drill, okay, so that you can actually
Bill just passed out. We lost Bill.
I cleaned that up. Well, on March 17th, I had to have a Foley catheter put in. And from March 18th till June 2nd, till I could get a hospital surgery date, I had a catheter in and was draining into a bag strapped to my leg.
Because you couldn't get into the hospital.
And I couldn't get in the hospital, get a surgery date. Now, under normal circumstances, I would have been in within 72 hours. I spent almost 3 months sitting at home with this bag strapped to my leg, saw the doctor several times, and the doctor said, gee whiz, you know, the problem is that the government says that that's not an essential surgery. I said, really? I said, bend over. I'm going to show you how essential it is. So, you know, anger?
Okay. Yeah.
So let's talk about whether to vaccinate or not. We should only create a vaccine to prevent serious illness. Now, you remember back in 2003, the pharmaceutical companies with the original SARS virus that came out, they spent $40 billion on the come because they thought it was going to turn into a worldwide pandemic and they were going to make a bloody fortune.
Mm-hmm.
We should only create a vaccine to prevent serious illness. This virus has a 98.9% recovery rate. Okay? Vaccinations will fail if the virus undergoes mutation. So you got King Fauci out there now all the time hopping up and down about, you know, the vaccination only lasts for about 3 to 6 months, and we now put it on the list of seasonal flus at the CDC, which means it's probably going to come back every year. It's going to be a different strain. This is such a mass propaganda thing. It is almost unbelievable. Joseph Goebbels would be proud.
God.
Yeah, because they're going to market this vaccine now for perpetuity.
But they're not guaranteed.
Right.
The vaccine is experimental. It's still, even though we have vaccinated 100 million people in this country, the biggest clinical trial ever happened, because we do not know what the long-term effects are, the CDC will not, or the FDA will not approve it. Okay, they will only issue an emergency use authorization for this vaccine. They will not approve it for several years until they find out what the long-term effects are. In the meantime, the government has given the vaccine makers complete liability immunity because it's an experimental chemical. It's never been done before. Think about that.
Yeah.
These vaccines, they're all gene-based. Gene-based. It's never happened before. They introduce plasmid into each cell genome, which creates an inflammation and toxic effects. Okay, we already know that some of these things have been causing blood clots. If you have had COVID, for God's sake, don't get the vaccine. You are going to get very sick because the vaccine now is going to be fighting with the antibody immunity that you've already built up.
Yeah, there's a pilot lives up in Siskiyou County, and he felt that because of he's a bush pilot, and because of the rules in aviation and whatnot, they were really pressuring him to get the shot, but he had already had the virus. So he went ahead and got the shot. Then he was diagnosed with some kind of, like, you know, to say mild leukemia sounds weird, but I guess it wasn't the kind that kills you right away. He would have lived for, you know, a pretty long time. And his doctor said, oh, because now you have this leukemia, you better get that second shot. And the minute he did it,
yeah, killed him.
Inflammation, a big inflammation response, had a heart attack, multiple things, and within days was on life support down at UC Davis, at which point they said, we can't explain any of the things that have happened, but basically he died.
The vaccines can cause myocardial inflammation.
Yep.
Okay?
And there
That's
he went.
Exactly what you're talking about. For God's sake, read the literature that we're talking about today. You've got it on your website. And look at the PowerPoint. Don't do it if you have any kind of comorbidity. The FAA says that if you have, as a pilot, okay, as I am, if you take the vaccine, you may not fly or operate an aircraft for at least 72 hours to see how you react. The vaccines have not undergone normally required testing. That's why they have to have emergency use authorization. The damn testing takes 2 to 3 years to find out, you know, the efficacy of it and whether they're safe. So there are certain groups of people, certain populations, that absolutely should not take the vaccine. Read the research, okay? To be called a pandemic, you have to satisfy three criteria. Number one, the pathogen must be new. Got to be something nobody ever dealt with before. Two, the pathogen must spread rapidly and across continents. And three, the pathogen must cause serious and often fatal disease. Well, if there's a 98.9 recovery rate, it doesn't qualify as a pandemic.
Hmm.
Okay? The swine flu, 1976, President Ford, H1N1, and then Obama in 2009, who totally blew it. Matter of fact, Ron Klain was on TV several months ago. He's Biden's chief of staff. And Ron Klain came out and admitted that under Obama that they absolutely blew the H1N1 virus. And they fudged the numbers, and finally they didn't even put it on the media anymore. The World Health Organization, there's a wonderful little subsidiary of the UN. They decided then to declare a pandemic anyway.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and come back with that, because honestly, from the very beginning, the whole use of the term pandemic, I never really understood. I guess if once everybody starts saying it, you can, well, kind of like saying that this is a vaccine and it isn't. Apparently, once you call it that, that's what it is. That's silly as that. We're going to come back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. just a little science goes a long way. It's too bad we don't use it that much. So in the last, like, 15 minutes here, I feel like we're cramming for an exam.
For the last 15 minutes, let me tell you what's in the vaccine.
Ooh, that'll be bad news.
Oh, you're going to love this. Now, on the website, you put up that chart, a PDF chart of vaccine, what are called vaccine excipients. And you can look up vaccines that you've taken in the past, and you can find out precisely what the formula is and what's in them. Let me tell you what's in these vaccines, okay? First, the chemical in the vaccine are lipids, L-I-P-I-D-S. A lipid is a triglyceride. So when you go into your doctor, you get a blood test, he's checking for triglycerides and what your number is. If you have terribly high triglycerides, you're probably pre-diabetic. A lipid is a fat. Now, think about your dog or your cat, and you want to give the dog or cat a pill, but they won't take the pill by itself. So what do? You take a little piece of dog food, and you hide the pill inside the dog food, and then when they eat that, they get the pill.
Yeah.
This is what the lipid does in the vaccine. It assists the messenger ribonucleic acid, the mRNA, to enter your cell. Then they have to put salt in it because the salt balances the acidity that's present in your body. Okay? So they've got to change the pH because otherwise the acid in your body is just going to ruin it. Then they put in sucrose. Sucrose is table sugar, okay? And the table sugar is put into the vaccine to keep the molecules in their shape that's necessary during the freezing process. That's why you heard about the Pfizer vaccine has got to be kept in dry ice and subtemperature and everything else, because otherwise the whole thing comes apart. Well, what else is in there? They have polyethylene glycol, which is a part of antifreeze that goes into your car. Polyethylene glycol, by the way, is also in laxatives. They have cholesterol. That's interesting. And lastly, they have formaldehyde. So I guess they're trying to embalm you before it's necessary. This is what is in the vaccine. You know, when you go to the drugstore, you get a prescription, and you get this little poop sheet, we call it, and it's got three pages of what's in it, what could happen to you.
Oh, in micro font, so it's probably more like 20 pages.
You know, takes a magnifying glass to read the thing, and most of us just go, okay, all right, I see what that is. It's Naprosyn, I got these three pages, and I'm going to use that for inflammation. Naprosyn basically is the prescription Aleve. And you throw it away. You don't even bother reading it. Well, you have on your website now the excipient list of everything contained in all of these vaccines that are available, whether it's polio, whether it's diphtheria, whether it's whooping cough. And you can see what's in these things. And people were screaming about, my God, they're putting mercury years ago in vaccines. Well, now you have the list, and everybody has access to it. And it took me months to dig this stuff out. But you have fat, you have sugar, you have salt, you have polyethylene glycol, cholesterol, and formaldehyde in that vaccine. Okay? Now, we get to what's interesting about Bill Gates. And Bill Gates is going to come up in the climate change thing. Mr. Gates has been in the news recently. However, in June last year, Gates said, and I quote, "We will ultimately administer this newly developed vaccine to 7 billion people, so we cannot afford problems with adverse side effects. However, we will make the decision to use the vaccine on a smaller database than usual and this will enable rapid progress. There's a dot for you. And this is going to come up with Mr. Gates in the climate change thing, because the climate change scam basically is routed towards depopulation. Now, why would you want to put an experimental vaccine into 7 billion people, phony up any side effects, because you can go to the CDC, you can go to the VAERS CDC.gov website, and you can take a look at all the adverse side effects that have been reported that they're willing to list. Was this actually the correct way to fight a virus that has a 98.9% recovery rate? What else is going on here? And the next time we can talk about the actuarial acceptable death rate. Okay? They've cleaned this up and they call it a risk-benefit analysis. I've been involved in that in aircraft engineering for 50 years, and I can tell you exactly what this is. And they use it in pharmaceuticals, they use it in aviation, they use it in chemicals. Okay, anywhere there might be a risk associated with any manufacturing process. Are we going to have more benefits than the risk shows? Okay, the greater good. God help us if you ever hear somebody talk about the greater good. Okay, because you don't want to be
you're in real trouble at that point.
Yep.
Well, you're at the back of the line.
I'll leave you with a great Mark Twain quote. Mark Twain said many years ago, quote, "It is easier to fool the public than convince the public they have been fooled." There's another dot. Think about that, and we can end on that note if you want.
We have 8 minutes left, so we probably ought to film them.
You know, it just, if you start digging, you know, unfortunately, this whole COVID-19 thing is like a hemophiliac. You know, if they get scratched and they start to bleed, it's very hard to stop the bleeding. Why investigative reporters have not scratched this? It's amazing. And I go back to, you know, the dot about an election year. Joseph Stalin once said, quote, "It isn't who votes that counts, it's who counts the votes."
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, when you start to think about these things and you start to take these things that heretofore may have been out in left field and you start to bring them into the infield and you look at them in totality, a picture begins to come up, you know, and I've got other stuff here. I don't know if you've looked at the PowerPoint, you know, but take a look at it. And who has this COVID-19 pandemic helped? Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
Google? Walmart? Okay? Just keep on going.
Well, it's also not very difficult to make the case that the forced compliance, you know, it's been a pretty great dry run on forced compliance. How far can you control people? Can you get them to stay home? Can you get them to wear a mask?
People sit there and they talk about vaccine passport. This week, Delta Airlines said that from now on, they will not hire anybody. This includes pilots. They will not hire anybody unless they can prove that they have been vaccinated.
In your research, Peter, what about all the people like me who can't get the vaccine because I have an anaphylaxis situation? So,
oh, please.
They might as well just, like, stuff a peanut in my mouth and be done with it. And So what about those people?
Absolutely. You are not within that population that was clinically tested.
Well, lots of people...
So they're doing a one-size-fits-all here. Now the FDA has said, you know, it looks like you can vaccinate kids that are 12 to 15. Really? Well, have you changed the dosage? Maybe you can't hit them with that full dose for an adult. No, there are no clinical trials that have been done where the dosage has been changed. I'll tell you something. I think, and it's only my opinion, I think that we're going to find out in 2 to 3 years that people who have taken this vaccination aren't going to live as long as the people who haven't. Because I think that these vaccines are going to be discovered to have disrupted your DNA. They did not test this on pregnant women. And now all of a sudden, the FDA is saying, well, we're going to give emergency use authorization for pregnant women. Well, you remember thalidomide?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, okay. That's my big concern and has been all along is... They made this an emergency use vaccine, if you want to call it that. But they don't know what the long-term effect of this is going to be 5 years from now. I mean, we've all seen the commercials. Hey, if you've been exposed to this drug, you know, call a lawyer. Well, my God, what's going to happen if they find out this vaccine is changing your DNA and all of a sudden... You know, you're having deformed kids, or you can't have kids. I mean, what then?
Trial lawyers are going to make a fortune.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
well,
let me think.
Back to those of us who can't get the shot. When they mandate it for everybody, or what they think they're going to do, and it's not an option for people.
Yeah,
you should get a note. You should get a note from your doctor.
Oh, you mean like the one I had that said because I have such reduced lung capacity, I can't wear a mask. That didn't work out so good.
I have a friend of mine just like that. The problem is that he's with Kaiser, and Kaiser won't do that.
He wrote me a note, actually. I did fly back and forth to Missouri last June, never did wear a mask. Actually, I've worn a mask 3 times in the last year, and it's a mask you can read through, so it doesn't really count as a mask, actually.
Well,
it was enough to fool Costco. How about that?
Government's not mandating the mask, but they're letting the private industry do that. And that's how they're forcing people to get the vaccine,
yeah.
Because you can't get back to normal life unless you can prove you've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
Isn't it stunning?
It opens up all kinds of discrimination.
Oh, my gosh. You look at these people. I mean, let's go ahead and just rip the Band-Aid off. Look at all these people we have coming across the border and being shuttled all over our country, who the heck knows where. Who knows if these people have the virus or not. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, there is an attorney that I work with quite a bit. He had to go to Spain for a case. On his way back, now this guy had the virus. He was out for several months. He was really sick. He's got a lot of problems. And so he's super sick, has the virus, and got the shot. Craziness. But he tested positive. They have him in an 8x8 cell where they're going to keep him for 14 days because he tested positive in some goofy test, and he's stuck on a Navy base in Spain. Can't get anybody to release him. Hey, I just looked at the time, and we just ran out of it.
Oh, we're definitely having you back.
So we're going to do this some more because we have a lot of questions. If people would like to have questions answered on the next program, go on the website and email Bill or email me, and we'll send them to Peter Friedman. We'll answer them next time. Hopefully next week we have the update on Arizona. Thank you, Mr. Friedman. We will talk to you soon.
Always.
You can find us at We the People Radio. And Bill said...
.us.